VOA.
Hello, I'm Lynn Ormudu. Welcome to Health Chat. Multiple COVID-19 variants are circulating globally. Observers say urgency is increasing as the pandemic extends into a second year. New variants that surfaced in the UK, South Africa and Brazil appear to spread significantly faster than earlier versions. Scientists are racing to find out more about these variants. Let's start in Kenya, where Kenya Medical Research Institute's KEMRI Wellcome Trust has raised an alarm on COVID-19 variants different from those in South Africa and Britain. Lenny Ruvaga reports from Nairobi.
About 10 investigators from the Kenya Medical Research Institute, or KEMRI, discovered the mutation of the virus responsible for the COVID-19 disease. Charles Agoti, a principal investigator and researcher, says that the variant unique to Kenya was detected in a batch of samples taken from Taita Taveta County, located in the southeastern part of the country.
Our interpretation is that because in this one place in Kenya, we were seeing it representing the majority of the sequenced samples, it does imply that actually it could if it has intrinsic properties to be more transmissible, it could result to increased number of cases locally.
Between June and October of last year, KEMRI sequenced around 205 genomes in the coastal region and further identified around 16 circulating mutations, all of which have so far proven harmless. Agoti says that the variant will not at this stage have an impact on the effectiveness of new coronavirus vaccines.
I think it's unlikely. This is just only one change in the about 1,200 amino acids long spike protein. So still there are very many other bits of the virus which the current vaccines target and can be able to neutralize the virus effectively.
According to the World Health Organization, these variants of concern, which are on the rise in 47 countries in Africa, may impact a person's immune response and need to be investigated further. Rudy Eggers is the WHO representative in Kenya. Eggers says that the mutations are a cause of concern worldwide.
So the vaccines, as far as we can say, will still be effective. So that's as far as we can notice at the moment. But this is very early days, and we'll have to do more research on that. From the early indications, it seems that the vaccines that are generally available against this virus are still holding and still are protective, but it's possible that actually there will be a decrease in the efficacy of the vaccine.
Brazil, the World Health Organization noted, is one of the countries where a new variant has also been found. Experts at Duke University's Global Health Innovation Center say they fear that the world may need to roll out second-generation vaccines even before first-generation vaccines have been fully introduced. Andrea Taylor is the assistant director at the North Carolina-based center.
So the current slate of COVID vaccines work by targeting the spike protein. However, the Brazil strain, for example, changes the shape of that protein, and our current vaccines may not be as effective against this or future mutations. Unless we can control spread everywhere, we could find ourselves in the position of needing second-generation vaccines before we have even rolled out the first generation.
According to the latest data from the Johns Hopkins University, Africa has around 3 million reported coronavirus cases with a fatality count of 76,000. Johns Hopkins also says more than 99,000 Kenyans are infected and 1,700 people have died. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Nairobi.
Now, Professor Salim Abdulkarim is clinical infectious diseases epidemiologist and the chair of South Africa's COVID-19 advisory committee. I spoke to him about the COVID variants and its significance in the global fight against COVID-19.
Dr. Salim Abdulkarim, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's a pleasure.
We've been about a year in the COVID-19 pandemic. Can you kind of give us an assessment of where things are from the beginning to now?
Well, when the epidemic, when the pandemic started in the world, I think we had no idea as to just how fast and how damaging the spread of this virus could be. But now that we have seen almost 80 million odd people infected, almost 2 million who have passed on, we're seeing its full effects. Part of this challenge has been to understand the way in which this virus spreads, how important super spreading events are, how ongoing transmission within the community is impacted by our prevention strategies, the basic elements of wearing masks, of social distancing and hand hygiene. But I think for me, the most important lesson has been just how important it is for us to understand our interdependence, how much we need to work with each other, how much we need to stand together if we are to defeat this virus. Divided, we have no protection against this virus because each person's interactions impact everybody else. I can never be safe if you are not safe. Your safety is fundamentally linked to mine. And so I have to protect it. I have to protect your safety because it's important, not just for you, but for everybody in our community.
You are heading the Council in South Africa with regards to the COVID. What can you tell us in terms of how things have evolved in South Africa, which has been the country highly affected on the continent, and now we are seeing a new variant of the virus. What are your thoughts on that?
So when we look at the overall pandemic and its impact in Africa, its impact had been far worse, far less than we had anticipated. There were several, you know, worst case scenarios that predicted mayhem, and very fortunately, none of that or very little of that has come to pass. But overall, within the continent, South Africa has had quite a severe epidemic. Fortunately, our first wave did not have as dramatic an impact as we had expected. I think that led to some complacency. And there were all kinds of claims that we had achieved herd immunity and so on after the first wave that were just ill-founded. We realized that, in effect, we had to deal with the multiple waves. But we could never have imagined that the second wave would be as devastating as it is. In my own province, we now have more than twice as many cases as we had at the peak of the first wave. The second wave is highly, highly soul destroying. Its impact on families, on communities, and on our healthcare services has been devastating. Part of that is related to the way in which the new variant, the 501YV2 variant, has been spreading. It spreads much more rapidly. So the cases mount very quickly. Hospitals get under pressure very rapidly. Oxygen supply starts running out more quickly. So all of the things that we desperately need to deal with this pandemic are put under pressure because of the new variant, not just because of the existing risks that we always had.
So this 501YV2 variant that we're seeing in South Africa, how virulent is it and how contagious is it? Is it much more contagious than what we've seen initially?
Yes, when we look at the evidence that we've been slowly gathering, it's hard to make, you know, any definitive comment at this early stage of the epidemic. But right now, we have evidence from two of the provinces where this virus, the 501YV2 variant, is predominant. And in both those provinces, to reach 100,000 cases, it was 40 to 50% less time. In other words, the new variant and the way it's spreading is about 40 to 50% faster. Now, some of that relates to changes we expect to see in terms of restrictions and personal behavior. But a substantial part of that is also due to the new variant.
What are the implications then with this, given how much faster it's spreading? And when we talk about the vaccine, there have been efforts to develop vaccines that are out now. Are these vaccines efficacious with this variant?
So when we initially described the new 501YV2 variant, we were concerned about four things. First, is it more infectious? The answer to that is yes. The best evidence we have to date suggests it spreads about 50% faster. Second, is it cause more severe disease? The answer to that at this stage, which is preliminary, suggests that it's not more severe. Our admission rates are not higher in the second wave. Our case fatality rates are not higher in the second wave. So, and evidence also from the UK with the VOC variant that they have are also not seeing greater severity. So it does not look like the new variant is more severe. Does it escape from natural immunity? If you've naturally acquired the coronavirus before, does it escape your antibodies and your immunity? The answer to that is yes, it seems so. That the three mutations that occur on the most important part of the virus called the receptor binding domain, that those three mutations, together with a few other mutations at the N terminal, they enhance the ability of this variant to escape convalescent serum immunity. So when you take serum blood from those people who've had this virus before and you put it in relation to the virus and you see if it kills the virus, the answer is no, it doesn't. It looks like the virus is able to escape those antibodies. So the concern is, are we seeing reinfections? The answer to that is not readily available because protection against variant of the virus, the new variant, is not only dependent on antibodies. It's also dependent on T cell immunity. So those studies are still underway and we expect that we will be able to get a better overall impression on reinfection within the next few months. And then finally, the question you asked, does the new variant escape vaccine-induced immunity? We don't know the answer to that. It's too early for us to obtain that answer. We can expect that answer to become available in the next 2 to 3 weeks or so, I'm hopeful. I think when we look at the prospects of a vaccine, there's no question the vaccine is a major component of our efforts to control this disease. We have to appreciate that this virus, like all other viruses, is going to mutate. All of them do. And as it mutates, it will find ways in which the immune pressure of vaccination will push it and change it in particular ways. And so we may have to end up, you know, enhancing our vaccines over time. We may have to put additional strain, information into it in the form of additional sequences or new proteins. And that remains to be seen over time. It's a bit early to predict at this time when and what will be required.
So how does this variant in South Africa compare to, for example, the one seen in the Great Britain? There's also a variant in Nigeria that they're studying. Japan also found a new variant recently.
So when we look at the VOC variant, which has been described in the UK, that variant has one mutation in the receptor binding domain, which is at position 501. Compared to the 501YV2, which has three mutations in that same protein. So it seems that the variant, the 501 variant that we've described in South Africa in December, has more mutations and so more opportunity to escape antibody immunity. And I think we're going to see in all of these other variants, we're going to be seeing differing kinds of mutations, and all of them will have differing impacts. Indeed, throughout the world, there are many different variants. They just don't concern us too much because they do not have major mutations in the receptor binding domain. So it's when we see those mutations in RBD that we get most concerned.
And finally, Professor Salim, what is the significance of these developments with the future efforts to contain the COVID-19 pandemic?
When we look at the 501Y V2 variant or any of the other variants for that matter, one of the most heartening things that we can take away is that our current diagnostics work just as well with the new variants as they did with the others. Our treatments work just as well with the new variants as they did with others. And our prevention strategies work just as well, whether it's wearing of masks or social distancing. All of those elements remain the fundamentals and are as effective against the new variant as they are with the old pre-existing variants. So we can take heart that our essential tools for diagnosis, treatment, and prevention remain effective. What we have to do is redouble those efforts, redouble our efforts to protect ourselves to reduce the spread of this virus, redouble our efforts to ensure that because these viruses spread much faster, that we take even more and greater precaution in the way in which we expose ourselves to risk. And I think if we do that, we can bring these new variants under control just like we did with the others.
Dr. Salim Abdulkarim, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate your time.
It's a great pleasure. Thank you very much.
That was Professor Salim Abdulkarim, clinical infectious diseases epidemiologist and the chair of South Africa's COVID-19 Advisory Committee. It's time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Health Chat. Malawi is struggling to quarantine migrant workers returning from South Africa after the country registered a surge in COVID-19 cases. At a facility this week in the commercial capital Brentire, returnees who claimed they were not told in advance that they would be quarantined and in the poor condition were destroyed property and clashed with police. Malawi health authorities say about 150 returnees at the facility tested positive and 20 returnees escaped untested. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
After working in South Africa for 5 years, migrant Rebra Gwori Gaira was forced to return to Malawi after losing her job amid the pandemic. She says as foreigners, we were living in rented houses. We were supposed to buy food on our own, but we could not manage that. Gaira is one of about 600 Malawians who returned on Saturday and were quarantined at Mabanga Prison Training School. The facility was set up to stop the importation of coronavirus cases. Migrants returning from South Africa account for 40% of Malawi's caseload. But returnees on Sunday touched buildings to protest the poor living conditions. Police used tear gas to end the riot. Some returnees say authorities did not inform them they were going to be quarantined. Isaac Chikadza is one of them. He says we slept on the floor. Mattresses were in short supply. He says the food was good, but the hospitality they received did not meet their expectations. Officials say all returnees were informed on the quarantine and allege that some may have been seeking to avoid paying taxes. More than 150 of those being head tested positive for the coronavirus and are being isolated. Benjani Chunda is the government's environmental health officer.
These people will go home under escort, so they will not be missed out in the community. And then they will be handed over directly to the respective district health office.
Malawian authorities are searching for 20 returnees not yet tested who escaped during the Sunday's revolt. Major Emmanuel Nzima is the deputy commissioner for prisons.
I think it will be simple because immigration authorities have their passports. So it's just there to check on and see who is missing.
Meanwhile, 39 other returnees were arrested and charged with planning the scuffle. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
The continent is set to soon receive 270 million vaccines, the African Union says, and they hope to see them distributed equitably across the continent. It's the first major tranche of what health experts say are the 1.5 billion doses they'll need to vaccinate enough Africans to achieve herd immunity. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
First, the good news from South Africa's Health Minister, Dr. Zweli Mkhize. The nation is still experiencing its second wave of the virus, but in the past week, Mkhize said the Rainbow Nation saw a 23% decline in confirmed cases. And now for the more concerning news. The head of the nation's coronavirus task force, epidemiologist Dr. Salim Abdul Karim, says a new variant of the virus, known as 501V2, is spreading quickly in South Africa.
Its affinity and its ability to bind to the human cell is now stronger. And that's what enables it to become a more efficient virus in the way it transmits. So this drastic change that we're seeing is being driven by a virus that certainly biologically looks like it can attach to human cells more efficiently.
He said recent tests are showing a much higher percentage of positive results than doctors saw in the first wave in the first half of last year. But he adds scientists haven't concluded that this variant is more severe. In fact, he said, current data suggests it is not. And he quickly allayed fears that the 1.5 million vaccine doses expected to land in South Africa by February won't work on this new strain.
I will not even attempt to speculate on that matter. I'll wait for the data. And certainly, we have no empiric evidence yet on whether vaccines are effective against this variant. Those studies are well underway.
And in a rare departure from science, Dr. Karim took a moment to talk politics, urging against calling this mutation the South Africa variant. When researchers first spotted this new variant, they were careful not to call it that in scientific papers. He explained why this matters.
There are variants across the world. And even if they're found in one country, we don't even know if that's where they originated from. And they will rapidly spread to many countries. The B117 is now in almost 50 countries. The 501YV2 variant is already available in more than 10 countries. Just like how we objected when the US president called SARS-CoV-2 the China virus, we should not call this variant by its country. We should call it by its name.
What does all this new science mean for the average South African? Not much, doctors said. Their basic guidance remains the same. Prevent transmission by staying home if you can, distance from others, wash your hands, and always wear a mask in public. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Still in South Africa, scientists in the country say mutations to the original coronavirus are helping it better evade the body's immune system. They revealed a new mutation or variant of COVID-19 in December. New forms have also been found in Britain and Brazil, and scientists say other mutations are present around the world. Darren Taylor has more.
Over time, small changes occur naturally in a virus trying to survive by making copies of itself. Most of the mutations don't affect how the virus works, but some can be significant. The co-chair of South Africa's COVID-19 Advisory Committee, Professor Salim Abdul Karim, explains that the defining part of the coronavirus is the so-called spike protein. It allows the virus to attach itself to human cells. Karim says the variant found in South Africa, known as 501YV2, is a change that is indeed very significant.
The virus and the spike protein now rotates about 20 degrees so that it's able to approach more deeply into the binding site, so that its affinity and its ability to bind to the human cell is now stronger. And that's what enables it to become a more efficient virus in the way it transmits. And we're seeing that.
The internationally renowned epidemiologist says the new conclusions confirm that the new variant is driving a second wave of the pandemic in South Africa.
We are now seeing today more cases and more deaths than we ever on any day saw during the first wave.
But Karim emphasizes this does not mean that the variant is deadlier than the original coronavirus. It's simply more infectious.
What we have seen is that it spreads much faster. It's left to be seen whether it will end faster, but certainly it has spread much faster.
He says the 501YV2 mutation is 50% more transmissible than previous variants present in South Africa. Karim, however, says data shows people aren't dying because the variant is in itself more severe. There just aren't enough beds and ventilators that could save their lives. He adds that South African scientists are also trying to answer a very important question.
Is there any evidence on whether the COVID-19 vaccines are effective or not against this variant? I'm sorry to tell you, not yet. Many, many scientists across the world are working on this. I'm in direct communication with several of them. We don't yet have an answer. We're expecting an answer pretty soon, and there's much to speculate on.
But, says Karim, research from the University of Washington on the 484 mutation present in the variant is concerning.
They took different viruses, and they showed that the 484 mutation is important and particularly plays a big role in creating immune escape. In other words, in enabling the virus to escape existing immunity. Those viruses that have a 484 mutation can escape those antibodies and still survive despite those antibodies.
He says this does not mean that the world's vaccine approach should change, not at this stage.
Vaccines that we see with the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccines at 95% efficacy are amongst the most effective vaccines that we have for any disease. And they achieve a critically important goal, which is they reduce clinical illness and hospitalization.
Other scientists have told VOA that should the current vaccines prove to be less effective in the new variants, they'll need minor changes. These will take a few months to develop. In the future, they say, people who received the original jabs may need another updated version for better protection against COVID-19. But for now, they'd like as many people as possible to get vaccinated as fast as possible, with the shots currently available. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Director General of the World Health Organization, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, warns the inequitable distribution of COVID-19 vaccines between rich and poor countries will prolong the global pandemic. Tedros delivered this stark warning to delegates at the opening of a week-long meeting of the Executive Board, which sets the agenda for the World Health Assembly in May. Lisa Schlein reports.
WHO Chief Tedros called the development and approval of safe, effective vaccines less than a year after the coronavirus emerged a stunning scientific achievement. However, he warned that hopes of quickly ending the pandemic are in danger. This because the richer countries are buying up and hoarding all the available vaccines, leaving none for the poorer countries.
More than 39 million doses of vaccine have now been administered in at least 49 higher-income countries. Just 25 doses have been given in one lowest-income country. Not 25 million, not 25,000, just 25.
A global initiative, COVAX, was formed 9 months ago to ensure fair and equitable access to COVID-19 vaccines for every country. The organization has managed to secure 2 billion doses from 5 producers, with options to receive more than 1 billion more doses. But Tedros said plans to start vaccine deliveries in February to many of the world's poorer countries is now at risk. He said he fears a number of high-income countries may backtrack on their promises of equitable distribution.
I need to be blunt. The world is on the brink of a catastrophic moral failure. And the price of this failure will be paid with lives and livelihoods in the world's poorest countries.
Tedros said he considered this me-first approach self-defeating. He warned rich countries will pay a heavy price in ignoring the needs of the world's poorest and most vulnerable people. These actions, he said, will prolong the pandemic, and added that the restrictions needed to contain the virus will increase human and economic suffering. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that's all for this edition of Health Chat. For the latest news and coverage on the coronavirus pandemic, visit voanews.com. Check us out at facebook.com/voahealthchat, and let's keep the conversation going. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all of our affiliates for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Lenore Mudo in Washington, with producer Dan Brown. Until next time, take care, stay well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.